If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
My name is Jik Jung, and you guys probably have seen me with a towel on my head, imitating our Viet moms and as well as our Viet dads. And it's great to be here.
Welcome to The Vietnamese. I'm your host, Kenneth Nguyen. Being part of a culture of nearly 100 million Vietnamese people in the world today comes with a lot of pain, proud history, and privilege. Join me as I highlight and explore the Vietnamese experience from all over.
Shout out to Chris Tran Burton, a dear friend of mine over at La Quinta High, close friend of mine now. And she had asked me just a few weeks ago, she said, "Hey, have you got that guy Jik on yet?" And I'm like, "Oh my God, I've been following him, but no. So let me reach out." So we're at a comedy show and I'm texting you right there and I got the response. So here we are. So thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
So let's give some context to everyone who doesn't know who you are. So you basically do a one-person show, a dialogue between several characters in your family. And it's really heartwarming because this is the reason why I asked you to come on, because we in the Vietnamese families oftentimes don't say, "I love you." And we do it through actions. And these are things that we grew up kind of not feeling good about. But today it's weird and it's odd that we're now getting a chance to celebrate actions more than words.
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up, I really didn't think about it, but I did notice it. I noticed, you know, my Asian classmates in school, they would be, you know, get off the phone with their parents. It was immediate, like, "I love you." Even if they had just saw them like 5 minutes ago, it was, "I love you." And never really took part of that until actually I was sitting in class in college one day. And I guess we were just chit-chatting amongst ourselves. And one of my classmates goes, "Wait, so do you say I love you to your parents?" And I go, "You know what? I don't really think so. Like, I've written 'I love you,' like if I'm writing like a card for like a birthday or something to, you know, my mom or dad, but I don't physically like go up to them and say like, 'I love you.'" And she's like, "Oh my gosh," she's like, "please say 'I love you' to your parents." She's like, "That makes me so sad." And I said, but actually the 'I love you' is reflected through what I do and what my parents do for me as well. So the fact that I'm home and I'm already smelling my mom's like cooking, and she's like, "You know, go shower, go relax, and dinner will be like on the table when you're ready." Even though I know she's probably bone tired from working a full-time job. And in return, things like my respect and, you know, obviously to them, you know, doing well in school and, you know, getting that good job is the one thing that you show them that you appreciate and that you love them as well. So that's my That's how I saw it growing up.
Yeah, it's an interesting societal contract that we have with in our Vietnamese sort of upbringing, is this contract that they're going to work their ass off inside the house, providing for on the outside and inside, providing for us, providing meals, providing, you know, comfort, security. And then you have the other side of the contract, which is you have to perform your academic duties, or you just be, you got to become a good person,
yeah,
academically and as a real good human being.
Exactly. My mom was actually speaking about this not long ago. She was just like, you know what? I don't mind that, you know, my as long as my kids are doing well, they don't have to be whatever, you know, engineer, lawyer, doctor, that I guess like the norm of a lot of Asian families have. She was like, as long as my kids are good and kind, empathetic people, I know I raised them well. And that was really kind of her way of saying, like, that is my way, your way of showing me that you love me.
There is a book written by an author named Lac Su. He's a Vietnamese author, and he wrote a book called I Love Yous Are for White People. Have you heard of it?
I've heard of it. I've not had the chance to read it, but yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think he was growing up in a time in the 90s and, you know, 80s that, you know, he's going through very tough father and, you know, I mean, by today's standards, abusive, you know, mm-hmm. hit you and everything. But that is the earliest portrayal of, you know, the Vietnamese style of loving your child. You know, it's one of those things where you keep them in line, you know, by hitting them, by yelling, mm-hmm. by screaming, and not disciplining the modern way. But ultimately, at the end of the book, you realize how much his father really loved him through the way that nonverbal cues, even though it was painful, but you realize how much the father loved him.
Yeah, I got spanked as a kid.
Yeah,
definitely. I was the my mom. If anything, my mom will full on disclosure say, like, I was probably, out of me and my two siblings, I was the trouble one.
Are you the oldest?
I am the oldest. Yeah, the oldest. I have a younger sister and then a younger brother. He's still in high school. My sister's in college. But yeah, I was definitely the problem child growing up, constantly getting notes back from teachers and, you know, like the disciplinary, not following directions, talking too much in class and such. And so, yeah, like I definitely got like the spankings, and it wasn't to the point where, honestly, it might be a hot take, I don't think that it was the point where it was abusive in any kind. Like, it was a spanking where it was like the boundaries of, like, you've crossed too many lines and now I am forced to spank you, versus I've talked to you the first time and I talked to you the second time, so now this is the third time, so I'm going to have to spank you. But in no shape or form for me did I think that my parents were being abusive in that sense. And I know, like, in today's like society, like probably, like the a lot of like the spankings and hitting your kids is a big no-no, but at the end of the day, I just know that they were trying to tell me, like, this is not okay, this is not okay, and we've now had to resort to this,
you know. And it makes me wonder, there's no spanking today, and I know that it's probably better on a general scale, right? It's probably better that we don't get hit, that
we're
not hitting our kids. But at the same time, I'm like, society has gone a little bit soft and it has gone a little bit. I wonder where the balance is.
Right. It's same thing now with one of my former coworkers chit chatting. She's like, yep. She's like, this morning, she was like, my son, he was not having it and I was not having it and he was acting up. I was telling him to brush his teeth. He was not brushing his teeth, not getting ready for school. And she said, I told him, I think around like five times. And it just got to the point where she's like, I just had to quite literally just go whoop, on the butt maybe a couple of times. And then that's when he finally had to do it. And I said, you know what? I don't even blame you. Sometimes that's just the way It has to be. It's not to the point where they're like screaming in pain, but it's that don't, like you're just not following what I'm asking you to do, and I've asked you multiple times, politely. It's not like she was, yelling and screaming at him to go brush his teeth. And so, yeah, it's just, I told him, I was like, yeah, like that's okay with me, but then I hear like the stories of the kids that were like, oh my God, I got like the
Whipped.
belt, I got the whip, I got whipped, I got the large broomstick or something like that. Then I'm like, okay, at that point, then is what is too much. Yeah.
Drake, were you born in the US or Vietnam?
I was not born in the US. I was born in Vietnam.
Oh, no wonder your Vietnamese is like on point. But then I'm like listening to English. Your English is like on point. So I'm like trying to figure out.
Trying to figure
Let me
out,
guess.
you
Yeah, let
want the
me guess.
backstory?
Yeah, all right. Let me guess. You came when you were 10?
Nope.
Hi, this is Kenneth Nguyen. A few years ago, before I launched the Vietnamese podcast, my father and all of his siblings passed away. Their passing marked the loss of their stories and the connection to my grandparents and great-grandparents. This is partly what inspired me to start the work of the podcast. Many of you still have the opportunity to record and preserve the legacies of your own families. I've just begun to sit with a few families now for interview sessions to record the rich histories of their parents and the lives of the generations that preceded them. Don't let your family's stories go untold. Take a moment to reach out to me, and together we will bring out your family's story on a recorded journey. I've included the link in the episode description. Visit VietnamStoryBank.com today for more information.
Came when I was two,
Holy, okay.
1997. Yeah,
Shit. I don't
fresh
know why
off the
you're.
plane.
Yeah, I don't know why your Vietnamese is so good, but here's my guess. So I always try to decipher these language things, in the little nitty-gritty. So I think that when parents come with a little bit more sort of English education or French education, they push in the early days in the 70s and 80s, they would push their kids to learn English quicker, or they would have this mindset that our kids have to speak English, and so they would let go of their Vietnamese. But the parents that come in the 90s, there's a little bit more sort of understanding that, maybe we don't speak English at all, and we speak Vietnamese inside the house, and that's what we keep going because we're coming from Vietnam, and that they can't keep up with the English anyway, so they're just going to retain it in the house. And then it shows up in the kids that come a little bit later that the parents are speaking Vietnamese, and it makes a huge difference to if your parents are speaking. I mean, this is common sense, and this is the patterns that I'm learning, that if your parents come a little bit later and they haven't like adopted that mindset that English is like the only thing that my child needs to adapt to, it helps a lot.
Yeah, you are 100%. You hit the target for me. I came over here when I was two, and my parents didn't know a single word of English. They knew hello, goodbye, and Coca-Cola is what I always say. And they knew that regardless, me being a two-year-old, I am going to adapt to the English language just like that because they're going to have to eventually put me in kindergarten, their daycares. And I'm naturally just going to pick it up. I might not pick it up as quickly as other kids in the beginning, but they know I'm going to pick it up anyways. And so and obviously there was no other language to be spoken at home except for Vietnamese. And so that's how I was able to retain such a strong connection to the Vietnamese language and simultaneously be, fluent, completely fluent in English.
And it shows up, and and along, I'm sure, with your audience, we love the fact that you understand the perspective so well, because it's not only that you can use the language, but it's also the fact that you can recycle it, you can regurgitate it into a comedic standpoint, and it takes a lot of sort of like perspective to get the different voices when you're doing these solo, dialogues. It's really
Yeah.
fascinating to watch.
Thank you. I I really got to give credit where credit's due. Aside from watching just how my parents talk to me, I grew up sitting and watching, like, Paris by Night, Bengsung, Asia with my parents and watching the comedic, like, haikus. And I kind of took notice of the actors on stage and how, like, they spoke. And that's also part of the reason why I think I'm also fluent, is that I would sit and whatever I didn't understand, I'm asking my parents, and I made that effort, even though sometimes I will admit to you, as a kid, it was boring because, I wanted to watch my cartoons, but my parents were having the TV. But it kind of turned into a really great bonding experience too, where I'm like, okay, so, like, he just said this, like, what does this mean? And why did he say it? And, like, they would sit and explain it to me. And so I think that's how I also managed to get, to learn, like, those, like you said, like, those little inflections and those kind of voice changes in my skits.
You started the Instagram page, I think, in 2020, right?
Correct.
Yeah, but you didn't start to really put your foot down into
No.
doing these skits. What? So tell me about the evolution of this all.
All right. So the evolution started on TikTok. It didn't even start on Instagram
Oh,
Reels
wow.
because I didn't really understand, like, the purpose of Reels at first. Like, now I fully admit that everything was, like, so TikTok based in 2020 quarantine. So in quarantine, my siblings were doing online school, and I was at the time working a job that I could work from. I already worked from home already, so it was good. So on their first day of school, I actually just decided to their first day of school in August. So we were still in, like, the midst of the peak of the pandemic. And first day of school, I basically kind of recorded, vlogged myself, helping them out throughout the day. And I posted a video, the vlog, and it blew up. And it started off, so then it started off me kind of showing just my daily life just as, like, the oldest in the family. And it was a concept of that a lot of older siblings, especially in immigrant households, are kind of the third parent. And a lot of people didn't see eye to eye with that. A lot of people loved it. They were like, oh my God, this is so wholesome. I love this. I totally relate to this. And then a lot of people were like, oh my God, like, your parents are, kind of abusing you for doing that. And I said, oh, listen, I was like, that's going a little too far. If I thought this was abusive, I would not be posting about this whatsoever. Like, I'm doing this because I genuinely love my family and my siblings, and I wanted to make their experience in quarantine just a little bit better, and helping them out because I know that my parents were still out where I work as well, and they had access to me since I worked remotely. But then that kind of fizzled out when I started returning back to, like, an actual office and stuff, and then I kind of stopped doing, like, those vlogs. But I wanted to continue my content creating, and I didn't know what to do. So I saw on TikToks, many people have done videos of, especially guys, record acting as their moms, Italian moms on Christmas, Black moms on Christmas. And I said, you know what? Like, I haven't seen someone really truly do a Vietnamese version of this. And so that's how I decided to do that. Topics that Vietnamese kids can relate to and that they've heard of in the Vietnamese house. Then the almond mom actually came, not even from my own mother. A lot of people think that my mom is like this. My mom is not like this. But it actually came from other creators that I saw that would imitate the moms that were very much promoting very unhealthy dieting habits to be super skinny. And then the popular, like, the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills video clip where Yolanda Hadid is telling Gigi Hadid, like, you should, are you going to be good? You're not going to eat that cake, right? And that's when I was like, you know what? Same thing. A lot of Vietnamese kids could relate to this. I've heard the comments to myself before. So I'm going to take this too and do that. And honestly, I really didn't expect it to take off. And I asked my friends about it, and they were like, yeah, like, we remember you telling us, like, what if people are going to think I'm, like, super cringy, or it doesn't even take off at all? And they're like, you never know until you actually put it out
Wow.
there.
Wow. You actually had that thought that it's super cringy and you did it.
Yeah, I yeah, it was
I bring that up because so many of us are thinking that about ourselves. We're always like, you know, because I deal with that. There's things that I want to do, and I'm like, oh, this is super cringy. How do I get over this feeling of stepping out and doing another project about myself, right? And I'm just like, I don't want to put my voice, I don't want to put my image out there. I just feel like it's super cringy. But at the end of the day, you just have to do it.
Yeah, exactly. You just have to do it.
But that's hard.
It is. I can tell you how many times I sat there, even some videos today where I'm sitting there, I'm like, good God, like, should I still hit upload? And I'm like, what if, it's always the what ifs. Like, what if they don't like this sentence I said? What if it's the, what if I get like this negative, like a negative reaction? And it's never been like that. Maybe one or two comments that are like, oh my God, like I, like whatever. But honestly, that's natural. It's going to happen regardless. But 99% of just the feedback that I've gotten has been such incredible positive support from people, and they how much they absolutely love it. And it still shocks me to this day too when people come up to me and they're like, I love your stuff. And it makes me so happy. I love it.
How does it make your mom and dad feel?
They love it. My dad is still on like the, I have no idea what my son is doing. But my mom, she loves it. She is like 100% on board. She finds it hysterical. She gets that it's a satire. My dad, on the other hand, I think he's still trying to understand like the satire like behind it. But he's still 100% supportive, and he's learning that, learning that this is something that, oh, like you actually see like on the internet, like content creators and, you know, people that are doing this from their, you know, like their home, like they might be acting, but they're not like on a TV show, but they're also now, it's not creating something fictional. It's immersing yourself in something that everyone is able to relate to.
You know, the beauty of my work is that I get to sit and I get to watch in the early days, a lot of content creators coming up and sitting and talking to people like you that are, you know, really on the initial leg of your journey. And I'm curious to hear how you feel about right now. It's like raw. It's, you know, you're second guessing sometimes the content that you want to post, and you're writing and you're discovering. Where do you see yourself in a few years from now with this work?
I honestly, if I can keep it up, I would love to be able to keep it up. I will always still be posting on skits. If you're talking like short-term goal, I would love to migrate over myself over to YouTube, but it's the same thing that's holding me back. What if it doesn't do as well on YouTube, if like as well as it does on TikTok and Instagram Reels?
But that's crazy, because isn't it the same? Like, is
I think so.
The same. That's like the weirdest thing. And I have that problem too. I have the same issue. I'm like, why can't I just like put this stuff in the different platforms? Although it's the same content that we're repurposing, and we think in our head that it's like different audiences. It's the strangest thing. And that's why I have a need to talk to guys like you and women like you. And, you know, because we as a community is learning that all of this internal fighting inside of our head is a real thing.
Yeah.
And I think the more we talk about it, the more we can open this up for our community and be like, yo, just everybody, just get your stuff out there. And we need more content, not more censoring, self-censoring about making content.
Exactly. When I first posted it like on Reels, and then it started taking off as well it is now, I remember, my three of my best friends, they were like, we told you it was gonna do well. They're like, you should have been doing it earlier. And I said, okay, yeah, like y'all were right, because I felt that I wanted to be safe. Like I was already safe on TikTok. I was like, you know, it's already doing well there. I think I can live like with this. And they were like, well, you're missing a whole another group of people that probably don't, that maybe don't use TikTok, but are on this platform. And like I said, you'll never know until you actually try. And they're like, listen, if it doesn't, like I said, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. And I think I was that mindset. I was the fear of failing versus I don't know how to put into words, but yeah, it was more the fear of failing and not being like, well, it could be a success.
Yeah. One of the hardest things that we as content creators go through and continue to go through is the consistency, because these kind of mental sort of anguishing, you know, dilemmas that go through our mind are really real. They're just real barriers that it's almost like a physical barrier, you know, like if you're driving and you get a physical barrier that says stop and you can't go through because it's concrete barriers. It's the same thing mentally for content creators, and they pop up a lot as you're creating because there's this doubt. There's this, you know, don't know if I'm going the right way here. And I just always want to bring this up when I'm talking to content creators or musicians and artists, that the key thing to all of this is to really find a way to break down the barriers constantly. And I know that's the toughest challenge that we all face, is breaking the barriers and then moving forward and just go through that cycle over and over. And after a few years, you start to look back and you're like, okay, these things are all in our head. We create them. You know, and I'm saying this because, you know, I'm saying it for myself. I'm saying it to preach to my own self that I got to break through barriers to improve my game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Constantly. I'm sitting there reviewing old reels that I posted. What can I do better? What worked and what I felt like didn't work? Or if I did post something and I was like, okay, you know what? I actually don't really like what I said there, and how I, you know, make sure to not do it again. And it's always that, like, yeah, you said, like, it's that barrier, like, you're constantly having to, you know, you felt like you pushed through like 9 barriers and then 18 more barriers pop up because you constantly want to always do better or keep that momentum going so you don't have to feel like you're going through those barriers. And I, it's cliche and like those stories where it's like the people are like, you know, they laugh at you because, you know, you had this one idea or they thought you were crazy. They called you an idiot. And I'm like, and you know what? And all honestly, they are. They're going to call you an idiot. They're going to call you. They're going to think you're, you know, what you're doing is stupid because it's not the traditional what you're supposed to be doing. You're really just putting yourself out there. But then, you know what? But it's also the same people that once you do take off are like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. like my friends, like they watch like your stuff all the time. And you know, you say, thank you, I appreciate it, and move on. But that thank you and I appreciate it, it is embedded with, I told, like, got you.
And what you just need to execute daily is noble revenge.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you have to go through it and think about noble revenge. I would take revenge, but just through the success of the work that I do, you know, that's just human nature. How do you think that this work has changed the conversation intergenerationally within your environment or the ecosystem of the Vietnamese community?
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to countrymd.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's countrymd.com/energy.
People comment like, oh my gosh, like I finally found my people. And people are just bonding in my comments. Complete strangers are just commenting back and forth to each other. They're talking about, you know, what they've experienced. And I'm, you know, just a small part of what I'm doing, actually, no, a big part of what I'm doing, but I'm just a small part in this, is that I'm, you know, connecting so many, you know, people together, and what we've gone through and what we've experienced as, you know, Vietnamese American children. And it feels so good to, you know, see that. And it's almost like I'm giving a voice to, you know, the minority of what, the minority. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, we all have different experiences with our mom and dad. Not everybody has had a healthy relationship the way that you've had it with your mom and dad. And I think sometimes I can only imagine that some of us are watching this going, oh my God, I wish I had parents and I wish I had a relationship like that with my mom and dad.
Oh yeah. Many people have commented or messaged me about that, being like, oh my God, I just wish that my parents were just like half as what, you know, your parents were. And, you know, it hurts me to read that. Yeah. Like I wish, like, you know, I wish no one would go through that. And they're like, I'm just living vicariously, like, through this. Or they're like, this was my grandparents. Like, I didn't have the parents like this, but these were my grandparents. These were, you know, like, this was my mom and my aunt and uncle. And it's like, it's those that it hurts to read them, because it's like they are wishing just like that, but at the same time they are saying like, this is actually healing me.
Oh wow.
And just watching this just makes me so, like, just like incredibly, like, happy. And and that means, those comments, like I said, mean the world to me.
Yeah, you're very blessed. You're very fortunate to have, you know, such wonderful parents, and it shows through the videos and it shows through these clips, and the fact that it's being projected into the world, into the Vietnamese world, is wonderful, because you have channels like Broke the Habit, right? And it's a creator, I don't know if you know who that is, Peter in Vietnam, and he has a very different point of view, a little bit more of a cold upbringing, and he's worked through the challenges, and he's worked through the emotional sort of journey of moving back to Vietnam and now reconnecting in a different way with his mom and dad. So it's a very different, you know, I've had him on, and it's just beautiful also to see the transformation and the evolution of what he's gone through with his mom and dad.
Yeah. I know, like, I've seen it too, like in real time, like real life, the cold kind of, like, Vietnamese parents, they don't have to necessarily, like, show affection, but it, for example, I hearing, like, my parents, like, discuss, like, you know, like, stuff that, like, they've seen, and the people, like, maybe, like, that they've interacted with, they're like, they're like, we could never do that to our kids. It's like, for example, like, the, oh, like, you know, you need something, like, here's some money, go away. Don't bother me. Just as long as you do well in school, I'm not really gonna kind of like partake in that. And then they see it, they're like, it messes the kids up in a way. They're like, do mom and dad not,
yeah,
like, do my parents like love me or not? Because, and like, in the parents' eyes, yes, they're like, oh my gosh, I'm doing so much for my kids. But in the kids' eyes, they're like, well, mom and, you know, all my life, I just saw like mom and dad working. If I needed something, they would just buy it. And then they would, you know, just kind of send me off and just make sure that I just didn't like destroy the house. And so I get it. Yeah. Like, it stings.
How do you know when you've made a good video or not?
I think when I, oh, like sometimes like an idea pops up and I'm like it was a genie in the bottle. For example, the Vietnamese parents saying, I love you. I knew that before I posted that, I was like, I feel like this is going to, like, people are going to absolutely eat this up, because it's just something that I just knew that this one is something that everyone can relate to in any way, shape, or form. And not only that, aside from just Vietnamese people, but other children and of other nationalities can also relate to, because it's a universal experience in a lot of households. That's just not Vietnamese. And so I think, yeah, when I sit and think of a topic, if I can basically talk for, you know, if I can record, and once I put all these videos into my editing app and I have more than enough to work with, I feel like I've had a hit. Because if I'm sitting there editing and I'm deciding, like, I'm not deciding, if I'm having a hard time deciding, do I keep this, do I not keep this, then I feel like I know that I've had a hit.
Oh, it's a really good answer.
Yeah.
That means if you have enough material, enough charm there, that
exactly,
you, if you're fighting for space in the video,
yep,
you know you got enough magic there to really make this work. That's interesting. Yeah.
Exactly. Because if I'm making it, there's videos that in the archive that I don't think are ever going to make it out. Maybe they will if I feel like, if I watch it like enough, but there are videos where I'm just like, no, it's not going to work, because I'm like, it's just, I find myself either repeating myself, or it's just, even if I'm not sitting there smiling myself and I'm not happy with it, I'm not going to post it. And maybe some people might say like otherwise, but also, you know, like, mom knows best. So if I show my mom, mm-hmm, and she's also just like, I just don't think that this one is actually going to hit, I'm not going to post it, because if she's not laughing, then it means, and it's a satire about her, then I know that it didn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. Subdoc says the same thing. Subdoc, another content creator, yeah, in our world, says if he's not entertained by it, if he's not cracking up, then it ain't funny. Yeah. And he's the first judge of that. And I find that to be very enlightening. But that's common sense, right? Like, if you don't find it funny, then obviously you're not going to let. But the thing that is really cool is you record a lot, and you record a lot of material. And then if the gold and the magic is not being uplifted and into the consciousness, then you're like, oh, this is not going to, there's no buoyancy. There's mm-hmm. nothing to make this float.
Exactly. Yeah. There's nothing to make it float if it's not even flowing the way I am intending it to. Then I just realized, like, you know what, this topic is just, there's just not enough, like, there's just enough, not enough seasoning for.
And then it goes back to like this idea of reps. Like, we got to, as a community who I always say, we're in need of more content creators, more artists, more musicians, more singers, more people in the artistic realm to push and to do the reps, to go in and just do as much as we can. And then whatever floats to the top, like in a video, then that's what you keep. But I think the fear is for us as people who are now barely getting out of the survival mode with the money thing, mm-hmm, we need to really push this idea of getting into the creative space and the entertainment space and making mistakes and doing the reps, so we can have enough. It goes on a micro to the macro level. As creators, we do as much recording, as much iterations, as much reps as we possibly can. And then whatever floats to the top is the magic. And if we have thousands of people in the Vietnamese world doing it, then we rise and the names rise. And the significance, our contribution to the entertainment industry helps with business and it helps with life. I think it helps with Vietnamese kids' futures. And I believe in that. That's the vision I see, is the more content that we can create with our names, our likeness, our images, the better we all are off. You know, it's just better for everybody.
Oh, absolutely. It makes me so proud when I see other successful Vietnamese like creators, musicians, and artists out there.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, yes, like that is like y'all are my people. Y'all are like, in a sense, like this is family. And it's that sense of that connection, and it makes you so incredibly proud. Like showing like my mom and I were, she's never in a day watched The Bachelorette, but because of Jen on The Bachelorette, and she's like, wait, she's the first Vietnamese Bachelorette. She's like, okay, we got to sit down and let's watch it. Cause my mom's like, she's seen The Bachelor, like, you know, commercials of it. And she's like, what's the show? And I'm like, it's, you know, of course, like it's the dating show and they're finding, you know, their potential like husband or wife. And, you know, but when I told her, like, this is Jen, like, she's the first Vietnamese, like, Bachelorette. She's like, you know what? Like, let's watch it. Like, let's support it. Because she's like, I love seeing, you know, a Vietnamese person, you know, on the big screen. And it's just this really great representation.
Yeah, and there's a Vietnamese dude on it now, too, right?
Exactly, yeah.
It's awesome. It's awesome. And then, you know, every time I'm watching a cooking show, you know, Chopped, or Iron Chef, or Top Chef, you know, there's always one Vietnamese person in there, and it's just awesome to see.
Yeah, it's the same with, like, speaking of that, like, you know, for example, like Christine Ha, Master Chef winner, like, you know, Houstonian, Vietnamese, and, you know, like, what she has, like, gone through, it's just so, it makes badass. Me, like, so, yeah, it's so badass, exactly.
Badass. She's a badass. Christine's such a badass. So, what's your day job?
So, I'm in human resources at NRG Stadium in Houston. I'm on the food and beverage side, so in the concession stands, so, you know, concerts, football games, all the big events. I help with like the staffing and all of the volunteers. About 70% of the people that are in those concession stands or in the retail shops are volunteers. And so a big part of that, my job is handling all of their paperwork and getting them in, because they're actually fundraising. Like, most of them are part of nonprofit groups like PTAs, you know, churches, police, like police force, the Navy even, that would come in and they're volunteering in our popcorn stands, you know, making hot dogs and stuff like that. And they're raising money from, they basically get a commission of the sales in that specific stand that they're in, and they and their tips as well, and it goes to a donation. It goes as a donation to their organization, and so I handle portion. Yeah, it's not a lot of people know about it. People get like so surprised. They kind of think that, just like, dang, like the stadium just can staff like, you know, 800, 900 people like that. But no, it really is all of our nonprofit, you know, volunteers that are coming in.
And is that like that at all the major
everywhere, stadiums? All the major stadiums.
I wonder what the whole deal with that is. It a tax structural issue, or what? Why do stadiums have to structure it that way?
I am the lowest of the lowest to answer that question. I don't even really know. It's kind of started, this has been a thing since the stadium opened in like 2002, 2003. There's a group that one of the church groups that I worked with, they have been there since the day that the thing opened. At least it was an idea. It's an idea of, aside from like the tax like structure that you said, yes. And also like, and also a way that they're giving back to the community and all of the nonprofits that are coming in to fundraise. And it's a non-traditional way of fundraising, because you're not having to do like a bake sale. you're coming in and you're doing this, and it's a lot, and it's a lot less planning. We do all of the thing. We set it up for you. You just come in and you take their order, you bring out their food, and you get a commission, and you keep your tips into your donation.
That's an interest. I never knew that.
Interesting. It's an interesting job. And then when I'm not doing that, I'm in the human resources office, with helping out like the part-time and full-time employees.
But I can imagine all the things that you see in the concession stands and perhaps recreating these scenarios for future content. Is that something that goes to mind?
Absolutely. Like just the stuff
absurdity of some of this stuff.
Exactly. Some of the absurdity. And not only that, like me getting even stopped at work, like during events.
Really?
Yeah. I'm on the clock, like with my walkie talkie being like, I need, like, I was like, my bar, like, you know, like this beer attendant is like out of like peanuts or out of beer. And I hear, excuse me, like at the top of my shoulder, and I turn around, and they're like, hi, like, are you cheering on Instagram? And I'm like, hi, yes. I was like, nice to meet you. I am so sorry, but I have to, you know, like, I have to run away and get this for my staff. And it's great. It happened, I think, multiple times. We host at NRG Stadium, the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. It's huge. 20 days straight. Concert, rodeo, cowboys, big carnival, like, type of thing. And I think it was like, yeah, like almost, it was like three times during the rodeo where I'm quite literally on the clock and I get a little tap, and they're like, hi, I just wanted to say, like, and the, also I don't, and I think they get also shocked that they're catching me at work and they're not catching me like out, like in public too. Like they see the walkie talkie and they're like, they're like, well, I hate to bother you. I was like, no, like you're not bothering me at all. It's funny because my coworkers know about my content creating too, so they find it funny when, when I get stopped like that. But I've seen watching, for example, like watching some interactions with just like parents and like their kids. I'm like, you know what? I feel like I can make something out of this because mm-hmm. I've seen it happen with like
Over and over
kids as well, over and over, just from like the crowd and watching the different interactions of people, and amongst my volunteers and stuff, they're like little stuff that I take notice, and I'm like making little mental notes where I things, and sometimes to the point where I would pull up my phone and I would actually type it out, and I'll be like, this is
gold.
Yeah.
You know who Stephen Ho is, the comedian?
Are you talking of? Yeah, he does the we follow each other on TikTok. He's the retired ER tech.
That's right. ER tech, EMT guy who was in the ER realm for a good decade, you know, working that space. And then he started making videos of, you know, those scenarios. And when I think about you, I'm like, you have a rich environment to pull from just like that, right? Because like the stuff that he pulls from, it's like funny. And you know, having your observational skills translating it into the video clips, I think is a thing. And then you go from there, and I'm like just playing it all out parallel to Stephen Ho's trajectory, which is he did that for many, many years, right? Build up this like massive following, then became a stand-up comedian, selling out every place that he goes to. I mean, the sheer tenacity of that. He might be our next, you know, Ronnie Chang, because he's got the kind of tenacity, he's got the brilliance, he's got the comedy and funniness for all of that. And how amazing it is to go from like the main job of being an ER, you know, tech, and then you just take it to the Instagram and you take it to the content creating kind of world, and then you go into the real world, back into the real world, and you're on stage doing all this stuff live now.
Absolutely. It's so great to see, because I see clips of since we follow each other on TikTok, and then I follow him on Instagram too, and just seeing just like sold out. And then I remember, like I said, in the beginning watching him when I followed him, because I just thought it was hysterical when he would do like the tips from the ER,
yeah,
and stuff like that, to where he is today. And I would honestly, like I said, I don't know if I, sometimes I can't even imagine myself at that position, but I would, like, it would be absolutely insane to be in that position. I don't know if I would ever, to be honest with you, do stand-up comedy. I personally, for me, that's not my strength to be able to. I know, like, a lot of stand-up comedians, everything is already planned out, like,
yeah,
what they're gonna say. But even then, I don't think I can be at that position. So honestly, major, major, major props to him to be able to do that. I've utmost respect for the stand-up comedians to be able to
absolutely
keep people that engaged. And I think it's absolutely amazing. And like I said, I love seeing, you know, like people in the Vietnamese community being able to thrive like that and grow in that, you know, direction.
But let me bring this up, because you're bringing up a really interesting thing that I would like to kind of spotlight. You said, I don't ever see myself doing that, right? And mm-hmm. and I completely understand, you know, like, that's a frightening experience if you think about being a stand-up comic, right? But,
yeah.
But the thing about I wanted to bring up is this, is that whatever it is that we envision, I mean, this is what I'm seeing, the pattern of all of these people that are mega successful, it's that their ability to envision their future is so clear, you know, 10, 20 years before it unfolds, right? Like, if you listen to like all of the podcasts about Oprah Winfrey, you can hear her talking about being a mogul from her 20s and being like this massive name in the entertainment business. And she had always believed it, and she always went and aimed for it. I am still figuring that out for myself. Like, where do I, you know, but, you know, I'm close to 50. So I'm like, maybe, you know, it's a little bit late in the game for me to kind of pinpoint. But I'm asking you, since you're very young and early in your life, where do you see yourself ending up in the future in the content creating space or as an entertainer?
I would love to be, you know, like acting like in like the comedies and such. And I see such a goal, like, for example, like when I saw, I forgot her last name, but her name is Sabrina and she's on TikTok. And she started off making those little funny skits about, you know, like Friends. And then she is, you know, she was on Abbott Elementary recently. And I honestly, like, would love to be in that position. And, but, you know, and just continue to, you know, keep growing my community and my following base. And just, I hope that it can expand, you know, even to greater lengths and such. But I think that would be a great goal for me,
near-term goal.
Yeah. On, you know, to end up on those, you know, really popular sitcoms that people are like, oh my gosh, like, he, you know, just to be like, oh my gosh, like, I started off making TikToks, and I still will be making TikToks and, you know, Instagram, comedic skits in my house. And now I'm playing this, you know, character that is, you know, in a sitcom. And it's based off of the fact that I started off here. And, you know, what you said about you being near 50, it is never too late.
Thank you. It's never too late. But at the same time, it's like having a focal point to reach is very important as well. You know, and you know, for me, my general goal in life is to put the Vietnamese on the map. And what it means is, when we step out from any international airport in the world as a Vietnamese person, that we hold our head up high, saying we are Vietnamese, and we step
Absolutely.
Out into the world and we are like, we are fucking Vietnamese and we are here. We have arrived after so many tumultuous decades. We have arrived at the people, and we're seeing this. We're not fully bloomed yet, not fully blossomed yet, but we have these things, these projects, these people, these you know, things that are happening in the Vietnamese history, and we could see it now. We're not too that far away.
I firmly am behind you on that. Is that I don't think we're probably that. Honestly, I sit and I think about the just even the popularity of Vietnamese cuisine, and just in that sense, the we talk about when I was a kid. You're not. I don't think I would have heard it. Maybe three people talk about going to a Vietnamese restaurant. Maybe, yeah, like I said, maybe there's another Vietnamese kid talking to me about going to another Vietnamese restaurant. But now, and just seeing, like, there are people out there that talk about how their favorite restaurant is a Vietnamese restaurant, and there people are talking, like, you have to go and try, you know, this restaurant. You have to go try this pho. You have to go try this banh mi. And it's non-Vietnamese people telling me about these restaurants that I haven't heard of, and I would look, and you know, like, people are raving about it, and everyone knows about it, and they're blowing up on social media, and I absolutely love that, and I want nothing more than for that to happen to the Vietnamese community of creators, artists, and entertainers. And like I said, and like you said, like, it's like to for a Vietnamese person to walk in the room being like, I am badass, and like, I like that is how I want the Vietnamese community to feel, is heard and head held high.
Jake, I just have one request, is that you never stop, is that you
Thank
keep
you.
Growing, and you continually put out more expression of who you are and put it out there for us to enjoy, for us to consume. And hopefully we will see you on something like Abbott Elementary in its own space, its own ecosystem that you get called in for, you know, because we put that out in the universe, it's coming, you know, and I want to see it. And hopefully the next time we get you back on, it's, hey, what's up, man? Congratulations on that show that you landed, you know?
Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jake.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.